Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hi, this is Big Randy, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello, and thank you to Big Randy of No Laying Up Golf Podcast fame for introducing our 1,000th episode of the Tennis Podcast. 1,000, baby. Whatever will we find to talk about today? Thank you, tennis gods, for delivering. We wanted it to be, you know, jam-packed.
Yeah.
We wanted to be pumped. We wanted to maybe have a bit of aggro, a bit of a story. I think the tennis gods over-delivered for us, didn't they?
I think that's accurate.
It's going to be a fun one, folks. It's going to be a bumpy ride, I think. Happy 1,000 to you, David. Happy, I don't know, well, do we have an... I feel like we should only celebrate the number from when Matt joined us, to be honest, and just forget anything before that ever happened. But that would mean we'd have to wait an awful long time for Big Randy's intro.
Yeah.
And we've been sitting on that for a few weeks, haven't we? And
we have.
We're very pleased to have it. Podcast cross-pollination.
Yeah,
we like it. David moonlighted on Big Randy's trap draw podcast the other day.
Correct, I did. And it was amazing. Matt and I couldn't be more pumped about Big Randy being on our show.
I'm quite pumped. Don't de-pump me.
Yeah, we love Big Randy. And I feel like in tribute to Big Randy, we should do this podcast in Big Randy style, which would be, what would that be? That would be an appreciation for sort of the small pleasures in life, wit and insight, and a very healthy dose of cynicism, I think.
I can do the last bit, you do the rest. We are going to start by discussing the shock snapping of world number one Iga Świątek's 37 match winning streak at the hands of Elise Cornet. It wasn't even close. 6-4, 6-2. Yes, Świątek went to break up two love in the second set, but Cornet was right back at it. And frankly, it was a pretty horrible performance from the world number one, and a brilliant one for Elise Cornet, who is absolutely made for these moments. 33 unforced errors from Świątek in 18 games, only 7 from Elise Cornet. Some wonderful quotes from Cornet afterwards. She was delighted that that match was scheduled on court number one, because of course it was on that court that she had beaten Serena Williams at Wimbledon though all those years ago. And of course, up until today, that was her biggest ever victory. I'd suspect that today would come close. And she said, "This court is a lucky charm for me. I knew I could do it. If there's a moment I can beat her, it's now on grass."
Yeah.
And we knew that, you know, combined with some brilliant tennis and maybe a bit of a let up from Świątek, we knew that's what it would take, wouldn't we? Somebody that genuinely believed and didn't go onto the court feeling somewhat defeated, which is what happens when players get as dominant as Świątek has been.
And Matt really knew, because Matt went all in the predictions and went for Cornet to beat Świątek in the newsletter last night. I mean, how...
Thank you for bringing that up, David.
How did you do that?
It's not his 1,000th episode, David.
But I am interested to work out What made you go from that, apart from the enormous points haul that it might get you, and it did get you, but, you know, Catherine's outlined what Cornet brings to the table, and by the way, I did find it very amusing when she herself brought up the fact that she'd also beaten Serena Williams on this court. That's how good she is. But, you know, it's a bit of a roll of the dice to go for Cornet in this one. What made you do that?
Well, it was a combination of things, really. I think seeing the way Iga Świątek was playing in the first two rounds here was extremely unconvincing. You know, I just didn't think, okay, I predicted her at the start of the tournament to win the event just because I thought she was the most likely individual. But in the first two matches, I just thought, I don't think Iga Świątek's winning Wimbledon playing like this. She was making a lot of errors. She didn't seem comfortable on the grass. And I was kind of just waiting for someone to come along and be able to beat her. And I did just think Cornet is such a likely candidate to cause an upset, partly because, as we've pointed out, she has literally done it before on the same court, in the same round, against Serena Williams 8 years ago. And she is so infuriating to play against because she's such a good competitor. She will hone in on weaknesses. She will not let go if she thinks she's got a chance. She will compete. She's good in defense. She's good in attack. And I actually asked her in the press conference, you know, what makes you good for an upset? You know, you've done this before. Why are you an upset player? And she said, what it is that when she's the underdog in a match, she doesn't get distracted by anything. You know, she says that sometimes when she plays, she can look around her and things can bother her. She is, quote, a drama queen for the people. And yet when she plays...
Get it on a T-shirt.
When she plays someone like Świątek, she knows that her only chance in the match is to be hyper-focused and to just, you know, take it to her. And that's what she did relentlessly throughout the whole match. Never gave up. And I just think it's amazing that Cornet has had, in her words, her best ever Grand Slam year. You know, let's not forget she reached the Australian Open quarterfinals, first time she'd ever reached the last eight of a slam. And she's been playing slams for a very long time. And now she's beaten Świątek. She's done this in the year where she said it's going to be her last. You know, she sort of clarified that today and said she thinks she'll go on to next year's French Open. But she said it's precisely because she has said it's going to be her last year that she thinks she's having these results. She thinks she's completely liberated and free on the court, taking everything as it comes. And she's got such a good attitude at the moment. I just really felt like she was a really tricky match for Świątek for all of those reasons.
She saw Joe Wilfried Tsonga's retirement ceremony on Philippe Chatrier this year and thought, I want me some of that.
I want more than Gilles Simon.
I want everyone I've ever met to have T-shirts with my face printed on it. I mean, it was the nightmare draw, really, for Iga Świątek, wasn't it? Because she hadn't had time to play herself into form, and Cornet's just, you know, your classic banana skin.
I'm still surprised, though.
Are you?
Yeah. It's Iga Świątek who's on that run. See, your view was you're waiting for somebody to knock her out, given the way she's playing. Mm. I was waiting for her to click into gear. Honestly, I was. And I didn't see the first set. I went over to there on court one, and then I proceeded to spend the next 5 hours literally sitting in the same seat.
It turns out David is a robot that doesn't need to pee.
Yeah.
That's something I learned about him 1,000 episodes in.
Me and Mohamed Lahani.
Yeah.
I can do the umpire's job, that bit of it anyway. I couldn't do the concentration bit. But I'm sitting there and I come in, she breaks for two love. Świątek, second set. Okay, here we go. And then I would say she played some of the worst tennis I've seen all week from anybody for the rest of the set. I mean, she was missing rallying balls into the tram lines. And I mean, you guys, I'm sure we're across the press comments. I was just sat in my seat for the next 4 hours. But I'm watching it, and I certainly am not saying she was tanking, but they were almost tanking-type shots, like she just couldn't play anymore. She'd hit the wall. She just came across as somebody who's hit the wall.
There was kind of a suggestion of tanking in one of the questions. You know, it was a bit of a leading question, and Świątek was quick to say no, it absolutely wasn't tanking. She used the word confused tactically. She said she didn't know what to do. She's spoken a lot this year about, with her new coach, being more aggressive, and she's trying to transfer that to the grass, but she's also trying to hit flatter on the grass. And that combination of trying to be aggressive and hit flatter was just leading to so many unforced errors. I mean, even in the rounds she did win, as I said, I was thinking, this is not very good tennis from Świątek. I don't think she's figured out how best to play on this surface. And I kind of wanted to ask, I didn't get time in the press conference, about whether, you know, obviously a big topic at the moment is on-court coaching. And, you know, the WTA has this sort of sideline off-court coaching at the moment. The ATP's trialling it soon. Grand Slams have never had it. I wanted to say, if the option had been available to you today, do you think you would have accepted some coaching? Because that's what it sounded like. It sounded like she was confused, didn't know what to do, and just needed a kind of word in her ear. But she seemed a little bit disappointed in herself that she hadn't figured it out for herself, I think. But, you know, I mean, honestly, I think we should probably take a moment to appreciate the streak. I mean, 37 matches, I think the joint longest streak in women's tennis since 1990. It's elevated the sport. It's lifted up the sport in these last few months, and it's taken in a lot of different conditions, clay, indoor clay, hard court, different types of hard court, and then culminated in a slam. It's been amazing, and she has separated herself from the rest of the field. And I'll say what I said the other day about Alcaraz. I just love that tennis has these natural defenses, and you can't just go onto the grass and still be the best player. The grass is something which is a bit of a leveler for her compared to the rest of the field, and I think that's exciting for the sport as well.
That's such a good way of putting it. She's elevated the sport with this streak, and she's also kind of saved the sport, I think, by, and I'm sorry to mention the absence of Ash Barty, as we, that was one of the drink a shot options on the Tennis Podcast drinking game that was lovingly created by a few of our listeners. You have to have a drink whenever anybody qualifies Iga Świątek's brilliance by mentioning the absence of Ash Barty, and I'm not qualifying it in this instance, I certainly don't intend to. The way she stepped into that void is sort of superhero-esque, really, because women's tennis was at risk of having a period that people would have viewed in the same way they viewed that sort of Safina, Yankovic, Wozniacki period of, you know, world number ones that people sniped about and suggested weren't worthy number ones. And, you know, they might have been right, they might have been wrong, but there was risk of a period where women's tennis went backwards a bit, certainly in people's perception. And Iga Świątek saved the sport from that, I think. And it's incredible what she's done.
Yeah, it's for that reason that I'm a bit sad that she's gone out today, because I agree with everything you've said, but Wimbledon gives you another platform and another audience that you can reach and sell that story to. And because she's gone out in the third round, there will be the people who say, yeah, well, she did all that on clay, but she's not that good really because she couldn't do it at Wimbledon. Obviously, we know that's nonsense in terms of the generality, but I do feel she hit the wall. I actually think the confusion is a very good point, and because she's had so much success by trying to go for it and be aggressive, actually she needed to dial into a bit of Ash Barty ability to just sort of stabilize, go into Ash has got the slice that she can just start getting a rhythm with, and you know, and look, she's had matches as well where it's just not happened for her. But I have no doubt Świątek will come good again. But I am sad that she didn't have a real run here.
Yeah.
Nothing against Cornet. Fair play to her. But, you know, just on a sort of personal level.
Cornet will now play Ayla Tomljanović in the fourth round. Tomljanovic beat Barbora Krejčíková in three sets. Goodness
wow,
me.
She had I didn't
to,
know that.
Yeah, she... She really had to pull this one out of the bag. Tomljanovic apparently worthy of back-to-back round fours at Wimbledon, but not worthy of the backhand list.
Correct. To quote Venus Williams, her backhand doesn't get my heart beating in the same way as some other backhands. Venus Williams didn't say that about backhands.
And we will be coming onto those backhands in due course, and we'll be coming back to the women's draw in due course. But I do feel like we should probably stay on court one for a bit, just as David Law did earlier without peeing for 5 hours. Let's stay on court number one, the scene of the circus for around about 3 hours earlier on this evening. Nick Kyrgios defeated Stefanos Tsitsipas in 4 dramatic whirlwind sets of tennis. Where do we start with this one?
Oh, I was wondering exactly the same thing. You know, should we start at the start?
Or we could start at the end and sort of read out the press conference quotes and go backwards from there. But we were less than an hour ago. We were in those press conferences. This is all fresh in our minds. We're still processing, quite frankly. It was a lot.
I feel like I need therapy, Kyrgios therapy. And in the absence of that,
needs a lot of Billie Jean time.
In the absence of that, I've got Billie Jean, who is being an excellent therapy dog right now.
She knows what's required.
She does.
Where do we start, folks? Well, David, you were on there from ball one.
Yeah.
So you start.
Look, I do think it warrants some discussion from start to end, really, because it was a wonderful atmosphere at the start. It was crackling between the two of them because Kyrgios was pretty much dialed in from the start. Very interesting experience to watch 3.5 hours of Nick Kyrgios without knowing things he's saying because I haven't got the TV coverage. Couldn't hear the dialogue with umpire, with opponent, with crowd, with box, all those sort of things. And I think that would have given me a different opinion of what I'm watching to some degree. And that's what I love about the in-stadium experience. I get a certain view and then maybe I'll go and watch it on TV or listen to it on radio and get a slightly different one. But my own personal view was that in the first set, he was by far the better player. He was racing through service games comically quickly. You know, he was spending even less time between serves than normal. He was just standing there saying, give me a ball, bang. Give me another ball, bang.
I decided tonight my favourite thing about Nick Kyrgios is how quickly he plays.
It's really...
It's brilliant.
Appealing. Mm. In the stadium, you can tell the crowd... there's a lot less downtime in the crowd. Mm. There's a lot less looking around because he's just rattling through these games, and I think that
you're not glancing down at your phone, you're not checking Twitter.
People were warming to that, and actually there was already a little bit of irritation between the two because, you know, they weren't playing at the same pace, and there's just that little bit of tension that's caused by that. And so Kyrgios is racing through these service games, tossing the ball down the other end. Tsitsipas's service games are rather more of a saga, and I just felt that Kyrgios was so loose and he was hitting some beautiful shots, some really ill-advised ones that were over elaborate, or he was trying for the circus drop shot that wasn't on. But generally speaking, he was just playing really well, and yet he lost the set. He lost it on a tie break, and he came very close at the end of that set to losing it because something irritated him. I think there was an overall. And he got irritated. He couldn't stop talking at the sort of 6-5 sit-down. It goes to a tie-break. He manages to serve into a tie-break, and then he loses the tie-break. And actually, Tsitsipas, I think, is a better player on grass than he used to be. The gist of his game now is getting there. And I thought Kyrgios did a really decent job in the second set of not tailspinning there. He could have used that moment as the reason the world's against me and gone off the ball completely. And instead, he turned that around and he actually won the next two sets. But those two sets were so full of incident and irritation and pettiness. And again, I couldn't hear what was being said, but he's yapping all the time, Kyrgios, at people and I personally can't stand the way he talks to umpires, and I've watched it for years and often thought if I was his opponent and I heard things that Kyrgios says to the umpire, I would want to intervene and say, don't talk to him like that, or don't talk to her like that, because it really bothers me. Now, I don't know what set Tsitsipas off, but something got to him, because he took a couple of full-blooded forehand drives unnecessarily at the body, directly designed to hit Kyrgios.
And just to confirm that, he was asked about it in press, and he said, I was aiming for the body of my opponent, but unfortunately I missed by a lot.
Yeah, and he got several warnings. One warning he got, Tsitsipas, when he lost, I think, the second set, he got a warning for smashing a ball away in frustration. And, I mean, there's a big argument that he should have been defaulted for that. I think a lot of people see he recklessly smashed the ball without really knowing where it was going, and it ricocheted into the crowd. I didn't actually see the replay, so I don't know whether it hit somebody or not. Kyrgios was saying after the match that it hit somebody in the head after it had rebounded, and he was having it out with the umpire and saying that should be a default. And obviously the gist I was getting was, if that had been me, it would have been a default. You know, usual Nick in those situations. But the tension, Catherine, you came and sat with me, I think, probably at the end of the second set or somewhere around there, maybe into set three. And when he was going for those body line forehands
start of set two,
the atmosphere was, you got the sense that this could really get out of hand, actually. And the interesting thing was that when Tsitsipas started to do that, Kyrgios stopped doing it. He actually started to play within himself. I noticed he gained a kind of, he didn't react to these shots at all. He didn't kind of like say, do you want to go then, or anything like that, which some people would. He was doing other things, but that was quite interesting. It almost seemed to focus him a little bit, the fact that Tsitsipas lost his mind with him. I felt the tennis remained good. I think Kyrgios's level was exceptional. Attitudes and opinions of what went on out there vary, and I feel conflicted, because in the stadium I was buzzing. I mean, it was exciting, but it was also uncomfortable. It was described on our Twitter, like two young lads who've had a bit too much cider sort of circling each other in the car park. And I thought, well, yeah, I know what you mean, because it was uncomfortable. You got the feeling like this could be really unpleasant. Then it settled down into more of a match. But Kyrgios had got the upper hand by then. And I do think he's in fantastic form. I don't think he faded physically at all. And this went into a fourth set tiebreak, which he won. And in the end, he was a worthy winner. But, you know, it didn't end there. It went into the press conference.
Boy, did it go into the press conferences. And I'm sure we'll get onto those very soon. Just to pick up on a couple of things you've said, David, should we talk about the incident of Tsitsipas hitting the ball into the crowd? Do we think he should have been defaulted? I mean, as far as I see it, I think the rule still allows for some discretion there, doesn't it? I just think it shouldn't. I mean, in my opinion, that should be a default. If you hit the ball that recklessly into the crowd, you should be gone. And I do think Kyrgios has a point there. It's just the rule as it's written at the moment does allow for the umpire to sort of decide, and it's a grey area where it should be black and white.
Can I ask if somebody smashes the ball into the air, you know, like they're trying to get it out into the stadium or whatever, out of the stadium, and they get the ball abuse warning, but if that lands in the crowd, or if it hit the stanchion and bounced into the crowd, should that be a default?
It's all about control, isn't it? It's about recklessness. It's about whether you're in control of yourself and the racket and the ball at the time of doing it. Because these are professional tennis players. If they're in control of where a ball's going, they are able to control where a ball and a racket is going. I think that's the crucial distinction. It's recklessness. And of course, you know, recklessness is open to interpretation, but I agree with Matt, it ought to be less open to interpretation than it is now. It's a deeply unsatisfying rule at the moment, where it's all about sort of the incidental outcome. It's luck. It's based on luck. You know, Djokovic wasn't aiming for the line judge's eye, but it happened to hit the line judge's eye. Had it gone 2 inches in a different direction, he'd have been fine, probably won that US Open. But he should still have been defaulted, in my view, I think is what we're saying. It without question, the problem is worsening. Incidents like this are becoming more and more frequent, and thus a tightening of the rules and their application is required, without question.
Yeah, that's where I come down on it as well. And then just to pick up on the point about Kyrgios's tennis, I felt like he made a step today in terms of his tennis, because to me, that's probably the best I've seen him play while there's also been a circus going on around him that obviously he is contributing to and helping to create as well. But so often that throws him off his game. And actually, I thought he was outstanding for the majority of the match, certainly what I saw. It's the first time he's beaten a top 10 player over 5 sets in 7 years.
Wow.
It was Milos Raonic at Wimbledon in 2015. He also has one other top 10 win over 5 sets, which was Nadal at Wimbledon the year before. So it does feel like he did something different today by winning this match. And there were bits of the tennis that I absolutely adored. Like, I really think that casual tennis fans would have loved this match. People were going crazy for it in the stadium. Some of the rallies, the big serving in crucial moments where he's breakpoint down and holds serve in a blink of an eye, the touches at the net, a lot of the simmering tension between the two, I felt was adding to the match. It was good. I liked those bits. There were bits I didn't like as well, and you've laid them out. A lot of it is Kyrgios's attitude towards the umpire and the constant kind of verbal abuse that he's giving the umpire. I just don't like that, and that clouds how I end up viewing the match. And then we get into the press conferences as well. But I just wanted to say that on kind of Kyrgios's tennis, which absolutely was brilliant today.
Yeah, it was. I agree. And on the, I agree, that was totally the best I've seen him play, was bringing the circus, because usually the circus is a deflection from losing. Sometimes it's preemptive, sometimes he starts it after he's begun losing, and I feel like it's his psyche's defence mechanism about losing. And so the fact that he kept up the tennis level, and as you said, David, almost knuckled down further after the circus rolled up into town, was pretty impressive, actually. Now the press conferences. Let's first of all, Tsitsipas came into press first. He didn't come straight in because Rafael Nadal was in press. Whether he would have rolled straight in had he had the opportunity, I don't know. But there was no question he had to go into the main room because everybody wanted to attend these press conferences. So he had to wait. He was the one to introduce the word circus. He did that in his first answer. And just to address first off, this wasn't the first question he was asked, but a few questions in, he was asked about the ball abuse warning that he was given, hitting the ball recklessly into the crowd. And to his credit, he was pretty profuse in his apology for that. He said, look, I have to say it was really bad from my side. I've never done that before, throwing the ball outside the court in that way. I did apologise to the people. I don't know what went through my head at the time. He said, I didn't hit any people. I did hit the wall, thank God. But for sure, I'm never doing that again. It's my responsibility for sure. And I've got a lot of time for that. I share Matt's view. The rule should be clear. It should be a default. But things happen in the heat of the moment, in the heat of battle, especially in a match like that. not everybody is going to behave perfectly all the time. You know, see Daniil Medvedev, he's another one that's pretty good at coming in and holding his hands up to it, and I've got a lot of time for that. So that's that, you know, by and large dealt with.
Agreed. That was absolutely my take as well. I think it's really important to own mistakes.
Yes.
Especially of that type, if you're going to stamp out this recklessness of smashing balls around.
Mm. Absolutely. Now on to other things that Tsitsipas had to say, and he clearly went in there knowing that he wanted to get this out. He wanted to say how he felt about Nick Kyrgios, and yes, it obviously crystallised tonight and was exacerbated tonight, but this was an accumulation from Stefanos Tsitsipas. He described him as a bully. He said it's constant bullying. That's what he does. He bullies the opponents. He was probably a bully at school himself. I don't like bullies. I don't like people that put other people down. He has some good traits in his character as well, but he also has a very evil side to him, which if it's exposed, it can really do a lot of harm and bad to the people around him. Myself, when I see other people disrespect me and don't respect what I'm doing from the other side of the court, it's absolutely normal from my side to act and to do something about it. What else did he go on to say? I mean, every line from this press conference, I'm scrolling through it now and I could read out every single line, but he said, I asked him at the end, you know, take away the circus, just the tennis. What do you think the result would have been tonight? And he said, it's difficult to say. I don't think he can play without having a circus. It's just the way he likes things being done. He likes things on his own terms, his own way. He just always gets away with it. I spoke to the umpire briefly telling him that, you know, it's really crossing the line in many ways. I do understand he got a code violation for something he did. I remember one or two times walking up to the line umpires, walking up to the referees. So it happened once, twice. It just feels very messy. He said, I wish we could all come together and put a rule in place. I don't know, something about talking. Why would you be talking while you're playing? It makes no sense. You're out there to do your job. Tennis is the most important thing that we are doing out there. Every single point that I played today, I feel like there was something going on the other side of the net. I'm not trying to be distracted by that because I know it might be intentional because for sure he can play other way. And that's his way of manipulating the opponent and making you feel distracted. There is no other player that does this. There is no other player that is so upset and frustrated all the time. It triggers it so easy and so fast. I really hope all us players can come up with something and make this a cleaner version of our sport. Have this kind of behaviour not accepted, not allowed, not tolerated, and move on better.
It's very strong, isn't it?
Mm.
And very well put, very considered. He can be a difficult press conference to attend, Stefanos Tsitsipas, but tonight he was measured and then he was strong. I mean, to call out what he sees as bullying behaviour is right up there in terms of strength of opinion after a match like that. And, you know, you'll come on to what Nick Kyrgios had to say in response, but I've watched Nick Kyrgios a lot over the years and watched the way he's spoken to umpires, and I regard it as bullying. Whether he intends it or not is another matter, but that's how it comes across to me. And I applaud Stefanos Tsitsipas for calling him out.
I agree. Whether he bullies opponents is less clear to me. But he certainly bullies umpires and officials, and increasingly so. And it's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. It makes me deeply uncomfortable. I was able to really enjoy the match today, exactly as you said, David, because we were sitting in the stadium. We weren't hearing what he was saying, and I was sort of able to to zone it out. And the aggro that we did witness was mostly the pantomime stuff. We got to hear loud and clear Nick Kyrgios saying good shot when Tsitsipas shanked a backhand out of court.
And it was kind of funny, and I think that's probably one of the reasons the crowd stay so fully on Nick Kyrgios' side in that moment, because we can't hear it. We can't hear how awful he's being to an umpire sometimes. And I think if the crowd could hear it, they would boo. They would not accept that. I really believe that if they knew what was going on, and I don't necessarily mean tonight because I don't know what he was saying, but things I've heard in the past, I reckon any decent-minded person in a crowd is thinking, that's not on.
And I asked him about that, Nick Kyrgios. I said, look, because Kyrgios was making a big deal of the code violation that Tsitsipas received for the ball abuse. And, you know, we've touched upon that, not okay. And I said, look, you both received code violations this evening. Tsitsipas has profusely apologised for the offence that got him his first code violation. Do you think that you had any behaviour that warrants apology tonight? And, you know, it was like a malfunction occurred. He's simply not capable of admitting fault, I don't think. And that is a very crucial difference.
I don't think he sees fault. He can't. No. He can't process it. He doesn't think. He didn't think he did anything wrong tonight,
and hasn't done for a long time. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the last time Nick Kyrgios fronted up to something. You know, when he smacked the ball very, very close to a ball boy after losing to Nadal at Indian Wells as he was leaving the court. He somehow, in the press conference after that, managed to turn it around onto the media. You know, it's pretty rich what he was saying tonight about Tsitsipas and the fact that he should have been defaulted, right as he might have been. There's a deep irony there, which he is pathologically unable to acknowledge. Tsitsipas's comments were put straight to Nick Kyrgios. They were read back to him, although I rather got the impression they didn't need to be read back to him because Kyrgios had been watching that Tsitsipas press conference live, and as I understand it, with the Netflix cameras on him as well.
All right.
And you'll be surprised that he denied any bullying. He said, I'm not sure how I bullied him. He was the one hitting balls at me. He was the one that hit a spectator. He was the one that smacked it out of the stadium. I didn't do anything. I was actually, like, apart from just going back and forth to the umpire for a bit, I did nothing towards Stefanos today that was disrespectful, I don't think. I was not drilling him with balls. He was asked about the accusation of bullying, and he described Stefanos Tsitsipas as soft. He said it repeatedly. And that was a portion of the press conference that I really felt icky about. The whole match and the whole tone of the aggro, particularly from Kyrgios' side, had a real edge of toxic masculinity to it for me. And that comment about Tsitsipas being soft has a cutting edge of toxic masculinity about it to me. And it, yeah, I found that pretty vile.
And I find it quite sad because he is somebody I think has gone through tough times, Nick Kyrgios, and has suffered himself in all sorts of situations, and doesn't appear to have any empathy for anybody else though, who might be suffering maybe as a result of his own behaviour. What about actually thinking about the consequences of what you're doing rather than just judging him like that? I found that really quite sad.
Yeah, look, I mean, as usual, there was some sense in Nick Kyrgios' press conference. He had a few good points. There was also some absolute nonsense and some unpleasantness. All is to say that he thinks he can definitely win Wimbledon. I like that he's saying that. I really like that he's saying that. And he thinks the only reason he hasn't won Grand Slam so far is because he doesn't like travel.
Mm.
That was the note that we ended the circus on.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
So, Nick Kyrgios moves on to round 4 of Wimbledon, where he will face Brandon Nakashima.
I kind of want to say good draw because I think it is a good draw. But actually, I mean, he's playing well. So, and there's a match that Kyrgios is supposed to win. So there's a different pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. So Kyrgios Nakashima in round 4. Staying with the men's round 4 matches, Rafael Nadal through. Finally a straight setter for Rafael Nadal. It was as if he knew something was going down on court 1 and thought, I've got to grab some attention here and introduce some accidental aggro into the mix, and then swiftly apologised for it.
Yes, because for so long it was such a contrast. You had this, to use the word again, circus going on number one court, and Nadal just ruthlessly and efficiently beating Lorenzo Sonego, kind of just to perfectly illustrate why he's the guy with 22 Grand Slam titles, you know, despite all the talent that's on display as well on court one. And then, yes, there was this weird moment where, well, firstly, the match was stopped at 4-2 in the third set, and they then put the roof on. And Nadal was really upset about this.
It was a weird decision because they kept playing on court one. I mean, it was getting dark, but it wasn't now or never dark.
That's strange timing, isn't it?
Yeah, 4-2. It's not a change of ends. Sonego was really pressing for them to put the roof on, whereas Nadal, I think, was thinking, I can finish this match without the roof, probably. And then he was also, it seemed that he was annoyed at some of Sonego's grunting, which was kind of extended grunting, kind of in the hindrance territory. And yeah, he beckoned him over to the net and spoke to him about it. And then there was quite a lot of tension between the two players for the rest of the match. And then the handshake, which we should say, the handshake between Kyrgios and Tsitsipas was missed by the TV cameras. I think everyone was just waiting for it on the edge of our seats.
Hashtag here for the handshake.
Literally here for the handshake.
It was brisk, folks.
And then the Nadal-Sonego handshake ended up being quite lengthy. You know, they spoke at the net for about a minute or so. Nadal really sort of earnestly trying to explain what his position. And then, yeah, he said in his interview that he was speaking to him in a nice way. He didn't mean to bother Sonogo. He didn't mean to offend him.
He was asked about it, the spicy end to the match, and he said, "No, it's spicy."
Wasn't as spicy. And then in his press conference, he used the platform to say that he was wrong. He said, "I shouldn't have called Sonogo to the net. You know, I think he was saying if he had a problem, he probably should have just spoken to the umpire about it." He apologised again. He said he's spoken to Sonogo in the locker room, drawn a line under it. But yeah, it was really unexpected from Nadal.
I mean, I didn't see this, so I don't know the sounds that Sonogo was making. But just from hearing it, makes me think, well, that's a bit rich. Because Nadal's grunt...
It's about the timing, though. It's not about volume or tone. It's about timing, I believe, with the grunt.
Like a delayed one.
Do you remember that match we were watching on Longlen with Hugo Gaston and... Was it de Minaur? Was it Hugo Gaston and Alex de Minaur?
Yeah,
where Hugo Gaston developed a grunt for 1 point.
Yes,
did he?
But mid, he started the grunt as the ball was passing the net.
Mm.
It had absolutely nothing to do with contact with the tennis ball. Anyway,
yeah, all that is probably secondary, really, to the fact that Nadal played a lot better tonight. He's been shaky, vulnerable in the first two rounds. He was a lot more like it today, a lot more aggressive, finishing points at the net. I think he made a big step.
Botik van der Zandschulp is next for Rafael Nadal.
He beat Richard Gasquet, didn't he?
He did.
Well, I still can't quite believe Richard Gasquet's in the draw.
He's still a tennis player, David.
Anyway, well done, Botik.
David, you watched Alex de Minaur defeat plucky, your classic plucky Brit.
Yeah.
Liam Brody, three straight sets earlier on today. You were in the commentary booth with John McEnroe and Todd Woodbridge. We thought you probably really enjoyed the last three games of this match in commentary.
Yeah, they were fun because that was the really competitive bit. And Brody extending de Minaur, breaking him back. And it was the most interesting... I'd never commentated with John McEnroe before. And the most interesting element of being there with him and Todd Woodbridge was asking them about nerves, no matter how good you are, how experienced you are, what a champion you are, what you've won. And here we'd got de Minaur, who hadn't been broken all match, suddenly unable to serve properly and play properly when he's serving for the match. And they just said, look, it happens to us all. I don't think you can stop that happening once in a while, and sometimes more than once in a while, no matter what you've won. And we've seen it. We've seen Nadal tighten in those situations. I can't remember too many, I suppose, with Djokovic necessarily. I've definitely seen it with Federer. You know, seen it with all the great champions. And, just getting their insight on that was really interesting. And Brody fought his heart out. And he won't make any jump in the rankings because of the lack of points. But just listening earlier on today, on my way in as preparation, listening back to the interview we did with him two and a bit years ago, where he was struggling to make ends meet, really. And he was saying the pandemic is going to cost careers because there are going to be a lot of us that just won't be able to afford to play anymore. And I'm just trying to hold on until I can play and earn again. And that autumn, he qualified for Roland Garros and won €60,000. And that was just life-changing money for him, really. And now he's earning so much more. And he's earned £120,000 as part of this run. I don't know, he's just great to see. And also, what a big achievement for de Minaur. First time he's been to the second week of Wimbledon, and it's opening up.
Yeah, he's got Christian Garin next, the man that was once known as a clay court specialist, but has now reached back-to-back round fours at Wimbledon.
Is he really? It's
officially his most successful slam.
That's amazing.
It's one of those quirky things. So, yeah, Garin against de Minaur. The other round of 16 matchup from the bottom half of the draw will be Taylor Fritz, who beat Alex Molchan today in three sets, and he will face Australian Jason Kubler, who beat Jack Sock in five sets today. Now, I thought could be a slow news day today why don't I do a deep dive on Jason Kubler? Who is this guy? The podcast listeners are going to want to know. Unfortunately, other stuff happened, so I'm going to have to squeeze my sort of 18 bullet points of information about Jason Kubler into about a minute and a half. I missed Match Point in Anisimova Goff today because I was on a Sydney Morning Herald article about Jason Kubler.
Yay.
What would you like to know, folks, in the space of a minute and a half?
Who is he?
He is... Jason Kubler is 29 years old. He's Australian. His middle name is Murray. He's a former world number one junior and used to be referred to as the right-handed Rafael Nadal. He has earned more money by reaching round three this week than he has all year, and obviously has exceeded that by reaching round four today. He has had 5 knee surgeries on his right knee and 1 on his left. He has a congenital knee condition. He was asked in his press conference today, could you just confirm, Jason, I know you've had a lot of surgeries. How many knee surgeries is it? And he sort of looks to the sky, thinks about it and goes, oh, only 5. Oh, and actually, 1 on the other one.
So wonderfully Australian.
Yeah, incredible.
It's like the way they talk about really dangerous animals. It's only a shark.
Yeah. He's won 19 of his last 21 matches. Now, obviously, a lot of those are at lower levels, at qualifying, but, you know, winning becomes a habit. That's serious winning. Today was just the second 5-set match he's played. You know, he's been pro for 11 years. He was a set down. He was asked about this today. You know, did he feel this run coming? Did he feel this form coming? Was there a moment when you felt like, yeah, I'm onto something here? And he said, you know, I was a set down and break points down in the first round of qualies, and I could so easily have gone out. And he said, tennis is just about the tiniest moments and the tiniest margins. And, you know, he said it feels like luck that suddenly a few of those tiny moments have started going in my direction. He said, maybe it's not luck because they're all accumulating. Maybe I'm sort of making my own luck, I suppose. But this is a guy that in 2017, so 5 years ago, when he would have been 24, so still, you know, 6 years out from being junior number one and heralded as the next big Australian thing, he completely ran out of money and turned to coaching for a few months. And he said that was as close as he got to quitting the sport altogether. He physically had no money to carry on. He said he quite liked coaching, but just not quite as much as he liked being on tours when he sort of earned a bit of cash and got the opportunity to go back out on tour. He took it, and here he is in the fourth round of Wimbledon.
Amazing.
Jason Kubler, ladies and gentlemen.
And 5 sets over Jack Sock. I mean, that's a heck of a result, isn't it? And I don't know about you, Matt, but I really enjoyed finding out about Jason Kubler.
I now know who he is. Yeah, that was really interesting. And Alex de Minaur spoke glowingly about him in his press conference, saying that he loves it when Kubler's around. He lifts everyone up.
I can see that. He's got a great energy and a luscious head of hair.
What sort?
Dense and black. He had clearly washed and dried his hair before coming to press, and he kept running his hands through it. And it was, you know, that floppy hair that's just sort of, you know, could be in a hair advert. That sort of hair.
Okay.
I did get all my information about Jason Kubler in, after all. Right, we better move on to...
we enjoyed it.
Amanda Anisimova against Coco Gauff, Sharpitch, which Matt and I watched pretty much all of, apart from, on my part, Match Point, because I was knee-deep in Jason Kubler. But it was mostly a great match, and yet I'm looking at the scoreline, 6-7, 6-2, 6-1 for Anisimova, and those second two sets look so one-sided on paper. You know, the reason I failed to notice Match Point was partly because of Jason Kubler, but also partly because it just seemed to come around so suddenly. You know, it felt like such a contest until suddenly it was over. And, you know, 6-1 third set, that doesn't sound much of a contest, does it? It sounds like almost a thrashing for Anisimova.
Yeah, well, there was an absolutely massive game in the third set with Anisimova serving at 3-1. and she saved break points. They had back and forth deuce, and it really still felt like the match could turn at that point and Goff could go on to win it. But when Anisimova held there, that I think was the probably key moment in the match. But I found it a riveting contest. Mm. I mean, it was condition affected. It was windy. It was not easy to play.
Inconsistent wind, wasn't it? Sometimes it would just die altogether.
Yeah, constantly changing. The players were having to adapt a lot. So that did have a bit of an impact on the quality at times, especially in the first set, I think. But what I loved about it is it was a great matchup, and I think they would have fun rivalry if they can meet more regularly. They obviously met in a junior Grand Slam final at the US Open in 2017, I think. Goff was only 13 years old, and Anisimova won that day as well. But what I liked about it was that, on the one hand, they've got quite similar strengths and weaknesses in that they both prefer their backhands. They're trying to get by a bit on their forehand side. It can leak errors. But then on the other hand, they've got really different strengths and weaknesses. Goff is athletic and a great mover, and those are Anisimova's weaknesses. And Anisimova wants short points and what commentators call first strike tennis. So there was this constant push and pull between the sort of rallies that Goff wanted versus the rallies that Anisimova wanted. And I just found it fascinating. And we joined the match at 3-love Goff in the first set. Honestly, for pretty much the rest of the match, Anisimova was the better player. She played a really bad game when she went up a break in the first set to get it back on serve. And then she played a sort of impossible to understand tie break where she was brilliant, 4-1 up, and then lost 6 points in a row. And honestly, I felt at that point it was going to take a huge mental effort for Anisimova to recover after losing that first set, because
I was expecting a drop off,
yeah,
big time.
And the opposite happened. She raised her game. She was pinning Goff back with really deep returns. She was brilliant, and I haven't seen her play that much on grass before, but I really think it's a surface which suits just the trajectory of her shots. They skid through the court,
and that trajectory feels unique to me. There's something about the flight of her ball. I can't put my finger on it, but it's different.
It's why she's top of the backhand list.
Well, it's like she's pulling back a bow and arrow with that backhand and letting it go. And
it's
just
so smooth.
Yeah. It's so precise and clean and smooth.
It's a joy. It is an absolute joy. The match always felt on Anisimova's racket to me. And I think Goff took that opening set tiebreak because she had a mental edge.
Mm.
But then, I don't know, Anisimova found something else mentally. It was very impressive. And that's fourth round, minimum fourth round at all three slams so far this year. That's quite significant for Anisimova, I think, because I think of her as patchy, you know, capable of brilliant things, but patchy and unreliable. So to be building that kind of consistency and to be someone that's clearly able to peak at the big events, I think, is significant.
It's a big win.
She will face Harmony Tan.
Oh, that's interesting.
In round number four. Tan beat Katie Bolter 6-1, 6-1 in less than an hour. First match of the day on court two this morning. Biggest match of both their lives by far. And frankly, Katie Bolter just never overcame her nerves today. She said afterwards she pretty much just hit the wall mentally and physically, and she just couldn't get her body going today. She kept on hitting her legs, didn't she? She kept on jiggling around, you know, trying to get something going, but she couldn't shake it out of herself. And look, the matchup was tricky for her. She did not enjoy the slicing and dicing of Harmony Tan, and on a good day without the nerves, she still could have lost this match because the matchup is so bad. But she didn't do the things that she was in control of. She served badly. I think she had quite a few sort of mentally poor moments where, you know, bad shot selection and bad tactical choices, perhaps, you know, kind of playing into Harmony Tan's strengths. And look, a lot of people were angling after the "were you annoyed that you were scheduled first on court two" angle after the match. And Katie Bolter wasn't having any of it. She very gently and very elegantly said, absolutely not, that is not why I lost today. It was a great atmosphere out on court two. Iga Swiatek, the world number one, is out on court number one. There is absolutely no way that I should get billing ahead of her. You know, yes, if there'd been weaker matches, maybe that match could have been elevated, but she certainly wasn't aggrieved about it.
Just on the hitting the wall, I mean, with her grandmother dying the other day and all the emotion that came with getting over the line and winning that match, you know, you can understand why she hit the wall, but I agree with you. Harmony Tan's game is just a nightmare for a lot of these players on grass.
And Matt's a Harmony fan.
A Harmony stan.
Oh.
I feel like I owe her an apology because I watched her in Billie Jean King Cup a few months ago now, and she got blown off the court by Camilla Giorgi, and was on clay in Italy, and I made a very general assumption about Harmony Tan and who she was as a tennis player, and I was so wrong, because I really like her game, and I asked her about it in the press conference today, and I said, you know, you've got a different sort of game. Did you ever have trouble with coaches not believing in you when you were younger? You know, did they ever try to change the way you played? And in English, she just gave an answer that, yes, absolutely, she had that problem. And it wasn't until Natalie Tozier saw her when she was 18. She said she was the first person to believe in me. And her eyes lit up just at the mention of Natalie Tozier. And then I stayed for the French portion of the press conference, and they really sort of probed and asked her more about this topic. And she told this amazing story about how, because no one believed in her tennis, she carried on with her studies longer than she thought she would. And then when she was 18, she needed a coach, and they rang Natalie Tozier. And she said she answered, which was amazing to begin with. And then Tozier said, right, well, come down to the south of France and I'll take a look at your game and we'll work on it together. And she said they got in transport that day, drove down to the south of France. She said, I was dead when I got there. I was so tired. And then she just remembered so fondly these 10 days she had with Tozier. And it was like, it just gave her the belief, you know, someone of Tozier's standing, believing in her. She's still her coach to this day. It's just a lovely, lovely story. And there's no sense of revenge about the way she plays. She's not trying to prove a load of people wrong. She's, you know, which would kind of be understandable if she was. But she's just going out there, expressing herself through her tennis. And I think she's been absolutely brilliant this tournament. And I think it's going to be a really interesting matchup against Anisimova. Anisimova's shot tolerance and patience is going to have to be perfect. And it was quite funny, in the Anisimova press conference she was asked about whether she'd watched Harmony Tan versus Serena back in the first round and what she made of it, and I'm sure, you know, they were probably hoping for some nice match analysis or something. She said, yeah, I saw it, I was in the Dog and Fox. And it was
Nick Kyrgios style.
Yeah. So I'm not sure she watched it that closely. She didn't have great tactical analysis to give.
I love that. And yeah, I'm here for Tan against against Anisimova. The other round of 16 matchup in the women's that was set up today, a yes please to Halep against Badosa, which is what we'll be getting in a couple of days' time. Halep is now the only former champion left in this women's draw. She beat Magdalena Freck today in two sets. Oh, I did a bit of an accent there on Freck. I don't know if I'm not sure about that. Anyway, she
kind
faces Badosa, who upset two-time former champion Petra Kvitova today. Two sets. Goodness me, she was pumped. It was sort of, it was vintage Badosa, actually, in the end. She went down an early break and Kvitova looked like she was doing, you know, in-form Kvitova on grass things. And Badosa really found something. She was doing that, you know, strong-legged, low centre of gravity, looking like she's crouching on the court, Kerbery, Radvanskery thing. And, yeah, it was really commanding tennis, and her box were pumped, weren't they? It was all the good Badossa feels, and it reminded me that it's been quite a while since we've seen those good Badossa feels.
Completely agree. I think this was the best I've seen Badossa in quite a few months, really. And she said in her press conference that she wanted the competitive Badossa back. She talked about herself in the third person like that. And that was it, because she's had some losses. Jodie Burrows the other week, there was one against Halep in Madrid, where I don't want to say she's gone down without a fight, because that sounds like she's sort of not giving her all. I don't think that's ever been the case. But
heavy defeat, though.
Heavy defeat. She just hasn't been able to make matches that competitive quite recently. And as you said, she went an early breakdown and she fought so hard and the hitting was so good and so intense. And I think in a way, grass, which probably would be her weakest surface, even though she also reached round four here last year, I just think having some lower expectations has probably helped her. She's spoken about that, hasn't she? And, you know, through the clay court season, people were looking at her to be a challenger to Świątek, and there was internal pressure, there was external pressure. It was all just a lot. And I just think being a little bit more under the radar, if being on centre court against Petra Kvitova is under the radar, but just a little bit has kind of helped her a bit this tournament, and she's really settled into it. And yeah, it's great to see.
Yeah, it is. I've missed that Paola Badossa. And it all went wrong after I started picking her to win everything. So I'm staying well clear. Don't care who wins Badossa, Halep. Just make it fun, please.
You've stopped putting pressure on yourself, you say, yes. Catherine, and that's what happens.
Yes, yes. You're welcome, Paola. Tomorrow's order of play starts on centre at 1:30 p.m. Heather Watson against Julia Niemeyer. My goodness me, there's going to be some tension out there for that, isn't there? That's just so huge for both of them, so huge. Then Jannik Sinner faces Carlos Alcaraz. And Novak Djokovic up against Tim van Rijthoven on centre court. He must just feel like he's dreaming, yeah. Tim van Rijthoven. I love it.
That's what makes him dangerous.
Absolutely.
I'm commentating on that.
Tatiana Maria up against Yelena Ostapenko, first on court one. Then Cam Norrie up against Tommy Paul. Elisa Mertens versus Ons Jabeur is the last match on court number one. Buzkova Garcia, Goffin Tiafoe, and then Jamie Murray, Venus Williams, genus, if you like. I don't really like that. I don't know why I keep saying it. they're taking on Johnny O'Mara and Alicia Barnett, the British pairing. That is the final match on court two. There must be a couple of other singles matches somewhere that I'm looking for. Goodness me, a lot of juniors. The juniors has definitely started, folks. I think that might be it. Are we suddenly at that stage of the tournament where all the tennis disappears?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. S. Johnson. No, Steve Johnson's lost, hasn't he? That's girls' singles. Right, okay. what a terrible note to end our 1,000th show on. Total misinformation about Steve Johnson. Oh, that'll pull the punters in. I can't believe we've done 1,000 of these shows. Here's to 1,000 more. Wow. It's a lot to take in. And on a day, no less, when David was described by Mr. John McEnroe as the king of podcasts, brackets, apparently.
Yeah, or something.
Or something.
He doesn't know what one is. But he's going to be a listener one day.
Yes, once he figures out what a podcast is, he's going to be all over this. We have, as always, Willow, our lovely Wimbledon mascot.
Hey, hello, Willow.
We have Darwin.
Right,
David's yours. He is yours, Darwin, but Darwin's yours, David.
Yeah. Didn't go well today, Darwin. Sorry.
Carter is my mascot, and we scored points with Isla Tomljanovic. And let's face it, Carter, we needed him. So thank you very much, Isla. And the dearly departed Gerald the Cat did well today with Matt and Elise Cornet. Billie Jean is asleep on my shoulder as we speak. She's been low-key snoring for the last hour. That's... That's her experience of our 1,000th show. She is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss, and she can't believe her luck. Kyle Weingartner and Chris Albert Lee are our executive producers and top blokes. And we have special episode 1,000 shout-outs, Matt.
Yes, well, let me first of all say that the Alexandria saga continues.
Oh, right. What's happened now?
Because Robert McNichol, the Wimbledon librarian, got in touch.
Good old Robert.
To tell me that as a Scotsman, I feel the need to tell you that there's also an Alexandria in Scotland. It's quite near Glasgow, and it's the hometown of the wheelchair player Gordon Reid.
Oh.
And then he also adds, and also my mum. I'm sure she'd enjoy a bonus shout out on the podcast. So there you go.
Hello, Robert's mum. Did he name his mum?
Lilius.
Oh.
Mm.
Hello, Lilius.
So we have a tug of war over the Alexandria.
Yes. So if I think it was Mike, if Mike could clear up where he is actually from, then we might be able to end this. Anyway, on to today's shout outs. We have Anna Keating in Gloucestershire.
Right, Anna.
Hello, Anna. Like Ronan Keating.
Yeah.
Yeah, whose son is entered into Love Island.
I've
been meaning to tell you this all day, Catherine, and then tennis drama happened.
I'm glad it did.
Mm.
Then we wouldn't like to talk about this.
One of the
is he one of the new Casa Amor ones?
He sure is.
Which one? Jack.
Jack.
Does anybody else not care?
Ronan Keating owns a coffee shop down the road from me here in Putney.
Right. Gloucestershire's not too far from me. I like it down there.
Anyway, Anna.
Anna, thanks ever so much.
Thank you very much.
We also have Stephen Still, who is in Buffalo, New York, just like our good friend Andrew.
Yeah, home of the Bills, Josh Allen.
Hang on, I didn't mention Jessica Pegula losing today. That's reminded me.
Mm.
Jessica Pegula lost today.
Right.
That is right, yes, to Petra Martic.
Mm. Yeah, Martic will now play Rybakina, who beat Zhong Qinwen.
Right.
So thank you. Who's the shout-out from?
Stephen.
Thank you, Stephen, for being from Buffalo.
To remind us of that.
Reminding me that I missed out crucial Jessica Pegula news.
And Stephen says, I once sat next to Andy Roddick on a small jet, and I was too starstruck to say anything.
Wow. Right.
And final shout-out is Emily Price, who is in Wodonga, Australia.
Oh.
All right, Emily.
That's about 300 kilometres north of Melbourne, she says, at the top of Victoria. And she says, Simon Briggs is flying the tennis podcast flag. I was chatting to him about 4 or 5 years ago at a pub during the Australian Open, and he suggested I tune in.
Well,
he's got your approach,
done,
Matt,
Simon.
Of converting people one by one.
Yeah.
They all count.
Never fails.
They add up. 2-6.
Oh, Emily, love that.
Mm.
Emily, Simon, hello. Hello to all our lovely listeners. You make this show, and in particular, hello to our friends that literally do make this show, financially speaking anyway. And in spirit, of course, David's given me a look.
I'm quite in agreement.
I'd better wrap this thing up now, shouldn't I? It's been a bumper show, folks, but it's our 1,000th, and quite a lot has happened. And I simply, for vanity reasons, could not let go of my Jason Kubler research. So, hope you've enjoyed all the many, many gifts that our 1,000th show has had to offer. If you've enjoyed it, tell your friends, leave us an Apple Podcasts review, sign up to the newsletter. That's all free. The link is in our show notes. And if you would like to become a friend, the link to do that is in our show notes as well. Thank you for listening. We'll speak to you on Middle Sunday.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.